Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello and welcome to Answer Me This. Thank you for listening.
If you've just heard some ads, please know we do not control which commercials you get to hear.
But now they're done, here is an episode of Answer Me This.
Will you sponsor me to watch all of Red Nose Day?
Answer me this, answer me this.
Why do florists laugh when I ask for a nosegay?
Answer me this, Helen and Ollie, answer me this.
How am I on this day of recording Answer Me This? Drunk on power, that's what I am.
Plus ça change.
Because after we talked about fast food companies doing home deliveries in episode 307, Burger King announced that they are going to try this out.
And when the announcement hit the press, I kid you not, dozens of you. I mean,
immediately.
Within a few minutes.
You'd just been waiting for this just so you could send it to us. You'd had a Google alert or something.
Tweeted us saying, oh my God, look what you predicted.
Yes.
As if we are the Nostradamus of the podcast world.
I mean, other people had already written in say, yes, it's already happening in other parts of the world. But now it's being trialled in Romford, Truro, Hornchurch, Skegness, Hull, Northampton, Hayes and Gants Hill.
Not Crystal Palace, fortunately.
Well, there's no Burger King here, so it would have to come in from quite a long way out.
I mean, this is sort of exciting. It's also sort of the beginning of the end of the National Health Service.
Yes, and the end of civilization.
We were discussing, weren't we, that the sums of money involved in creating a service like that probably wouldn't make it worthwhile, because you could theoretically order a cheeseburger for $1.69 or whatever. But actually, what's interesting is when you're on the site, there's some clever reverse psychology at work. They offer you, rather like KFC, sort of feasts, combinations.
Oh, right, I see.
And you are led down the path of spending 25 quid on Burger King. Now, you don't have to, but there's almost a sense of guilt, I think, if you just order a burger. Like, there's definitely a sense that you should be ordering milkshakes, mozzarella sticks, accoutrements, basically, that you wouldn't order in the shop.
25 quid, though. I mean, I think if I ordered myself that much food from Burger King, I would cry myself to sleep.
Do you remember back in the 80s when McDonald's was well established, Burger King not so much in this country, and their trademark was have it your way? You'd go into a Burger King and you'd be able to ask anything, and allegedly, according to the advertisements, never actually happened because we're in England where customer service doesn't exist. People would say, you got it. And you'd be like, I'd like 5 pieces of cheese, please, and an onion. You got it. Have it your way at BK. You got it. That's all gone.
Really?
There's no customization on the delivery. So if you're someone
have
who goes
it our
in...
our way, yeah, dicks.
Have it our way.
BK, fuck you.
Stick it. So that is something to bear in mind. You know, people are very excited, but if you're someone who likes to go in and specify a particular type of burger twist, that ain't going to happen delivery-wise.
Other exciting thing that happened since last we met Ollie, Answer Me This appeared as a clue in the Mail on Sunday crossword.
Yes, that was very exciting, wasn't it? Long-running podcast presented by Helen Zaltzman and Ollie Mann. Blank me this. Bracket six, close bracket.
That's not the first time we've been a clue in a right-wing tabloid's crosswords.
I'd like to appear in a Sudoku one day.
What, as the number 9?
Here's a question from Rob in Loughborough. He says, I moved to Loughborough about 10 years ago, and I thought it was ace when I found out that a few miles up the A60, there is a village called Gotham, which is a fricking brilliant name.
Gotham City in Nottinghamshire.
Yeah. City of Justice? I wonder if it has a crown court. Probably not if it's just a village.
Yeah, it's pretty small, isn't it?
Yeah, it's probably just a market town. However, he says, I soon found out that it is pronounced Gotham by the locals, and I got disapproving looks when pronouncing it a la Bruce Wayne. So Helen, answer me this. What is wrong with these people?
What's wrong with you? You'd think they would know how to pronounce where they live. Like if people came to Loughborough and started calling it Lugbrug or Loughbruff, then you would be like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah, but if you knew that really, there's not all that much... I'm going to go out on a limb and say there's not all that much exciting about Gotham.
Oh, excuse me, Ollie. How can you say that with a place that contains Cuckoo Bush Mound?
What else is in Gotham?
Sorley Pubis Road.
Well, I'll admit, Gotham had a quite outstandingly boring website, but I think that was deliberate to really quell the excitement of people who went there, like, oh, it's named the same thing like where Batman lives. And they're like, oh, Village Hall curtain fell down, that kind of level of interest.
Right, yeah. I wonder, though, but, you know, with all the publicity around Arkham City and all those kind of...
Arkham City!
All those games where you can sort of explore the world of Batman.
Mm.
You'd think there'd be a tie-in there, wouldn't you, between the games company and the village? Like, they've missed an opportunity there. So, I mean, every time they launch a new one of those games, they need a gimmick. Like, bringing all the tech journalists to Gotham would actually be quite fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, why not?
And they could explore Gotham like you do as Batman explore Gotham.
If anything, it is all the Bat fans that are calling Gotham City by the wrong name.
Ah!
Gotham, Nottinghamshire, that's in the Doomsday Book. It's an ancient town, and it came from the words goat and home of the goats.
Is there a possibility that it was supposed to be pronounced Gotham all along, and it was just in the perhaps 60s TV series they started mispronouncing it, and then it stuck?
Maybe.
Because you didn't hear it said out loud, did you? You just read it in the comic book.
The comic book got it from Washington Irving, nicknaming New York that, in the Salma Gundy papers, so maybe he didn't know that it was pronounced Gotham. Because why would you think it was pronounced Gotham?
That's amazing. Wouldn't it be great if just in one of those films someone said to Batman, mate, you're getting it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, when he's being well hard, he's like, come to my Gotham City. You're like, yeah, I will, but it's Gotham.
Can you say Gotham in the Batman growl?
I'm from Gotham.
It's not bad.
Yeah, except that I'm doing Bale Batman, and obviously they will have changed Batman by the time the next Batman comes along, won't they?
Well, so Ben Affleck's be like, the next Batman.
Oh, fine. So it'll be like, I'm from Gotham.
Yeah, that's how he speaks, like, isn't it? Doing a Boston accent, because that would be the appropriate Batfleck accent.
I'm the Waterman, have some craft beer with me.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. Just channeling Affleck.
The tiny little old southern lady that lives inside you, Ollie.
Hello, this is James from London. I've just put a stew in, and I was thinking, why is Snoopy's little bird friend called Woodstock? Is it related to the music festival of the same name? Or is it just a coincidence?
He is, of course, named after the small village on the outside of Oxfordshire. Wouldn't that be cool?
But is he named after the small village in upstate New York of the same name?
He is actually named after the music festival.
That was held not near.
Near that place in New York State. So I suppose, sort of indirectly, he's named after the village. But no, really, he's named after, the music festival. And that's because he is kind of a trippy character, isn't he?
Is he?
He's a hippie.
And I was wondering why Snoopy is called Snoopy, because he doesn't do much snooping around. He's a very incurious dog.
Sort of sleeps a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
But dogs typically get named before owners get to really know their characters.
Good point. But do the same rules obtain to cartoon dogs where there is some element of foreknowledge?
I have to preface anything that I say about Snoopy with reminding you, I hate Snoopy.
You do.
Why do you hate Snoopy?
Because as
it's
a child...
It's too existential, Martin. It's not enough fun.
Interested in, fun stuff like Stockholm Syndrome in Beauty and the Beast or Victorian poverty in Mickey's Christmas Carol.
Or nihilism in Garfield.
I wasn't interested in existentialism, and I just couldn't handle the philosophical bullshit and no punchlines of Snoopy.
Well, so did you like Garfield? Because Garfield's similar, isn't
it? Yeah, I like Garfield, but that's a cat. I also don't like dogs.
So you like existential cats, not existential dogs?
Yeah, I think that's about right, yeah.
Garfield's a bit more flamboyant than Snoopy as well.
Well, also Garfield's motivations were easier to understand.
What, greed?
Yeah, exactly. So the end of every strip, even if it's been moderately sort of philosophical, ends with lasagna. Whereas Snoopy's just leave you hanging, and you're like, I don't know what this means, and actually life is too short for me to be thinking about what a cartoon saying that life is too short can do for me.
Don't you think it's sad that Garfield always coming back to his base urges and not answering those philosophical questions that Snoopy's left wrestling with?
Well, Garfield's sort of like a Falstaffian character in that way, I suppose.
Yeah, he eats to forget.
As an adult, looking at the strips now, I find them both unfunny, so I wonder if when I'm like 70... I'll still not like Garfield, but I will come round to Snoopy. Maybe it's possible. Mm. Maybe.
What creature is Woodstock?
A canary?
Woodstock looks like a fetal version of Big Bird.
Yes, he does a bit, yeah. Mm.
But neither of them really look like bona fide birds.
Numerous years of Snoopy were spent trying to identify what kind of bird he is. Snoopy's list was crow, American bittern, Caroline Wren, rufous-sided towhee. This is why I hate Snoopy, all this shit.
Oh, just messing around.
Oh, God, whimsy.
Surrealism.
Yellow-billed cuckoo, Canada goose, warbler, and a mourning warbler.
Okay, well, none of the above.
In 1980, after 10 years of guessing, Snoopy gave up trying to guess. That's why I hate Snoopy. Like, come on, give me a story.
That's
give
pure
me a song.
Existentialism.
Give me fun.
Here's a question from B from the Netherlands, who says, some months ago, I was asked by my boyfriend to accompany him to the funeral of his ex.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I was hesitant, but I wanted to show some support, so I went.
Good.
During the funeral, they played something from ELO, Mr. Blue Sky.
Quite jolly for a funeral.
It's a good send-off type tune in the way that some of the bombastic hymns are, I think. It's stirring.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Bush and another artist I have never heard of.
Okay.
I really loved the third song, and without thinking much about it, I took out my phone and opened Shazam.
No!
Shazam wow. worked.
You can't do that at a funeral.
At the funeral.
That's like the people who tweet that they're, you know, sitting behind a celebrity at a funeral. Mm. You can't do that.
Shazam worked and gave me the name of the song and of the artist.
Yeah, because Shazam's an app and it doesn't know that you're in a funeral, but it shouldn't work when you're there because you shouldn't be using it.
Well, then they should have some kind of signal scrambler on funeral.
Oh, sure, yeah, and they should give everyone an iPod shuffle when they leave with the playlist on. For
yeah.
So my funeral's going to be in a Faraday cage.
Ollie, answer me this. Was it inconsiderate of me to have Shazammed a song during a point in the service where everybody's supposed to reminisce about the guy who died?
What do you think? What do you think? I mean, you could have just asked afterwards, couldn't you?
That's the thing. There are a lot of people around you can ask. There may even be in some funerals an order of service with these songs written down.
Often at those occasions, it's very difficult for people to know what to say afterwards. You know, people often struggle for what to say as a matter of condolence, you know, how to comment on the service you've just seen. It's actually a good weapon to have in your arsenal, isn't it? Something up your sleeve. Go up to people after and say, that was such a beautiful song. Do you know what it was? Why didn't you do that?
Yeah, because also, would your boyfriend not know this song? Which, in case you're wondering, was Happiness by Jonathan Jeremiah. I'm not familiar with it.
I wasn't. I've listened to it now. It's okay.
Would you whip out your phone during a funeral to find out the identity of it?
Like to think I could fight that instinct, but, you know, maybe I'd just multitask and get some Angry Birds done.
I've got a question! Then email your question. To answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this podcast at googlemail.com. Answer me this podcast at googlemail.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Here's a question from Alan, who says, with Comic Relief just around the corner, I was reminded of various stunts that fundraisers have tried over the years, and I had some questions regarding the one that seemed to be prominent when I was younger, the bathing in baked beans.
Mm.
That did used to get talked about a lot, didn't it? Although I remember more the gunge tank being the thing.
Gunge didn't seem to be a huge issue to me. If you went dressed for the gunge tank, then you could easily get through the gunge tank.
And you always knew that really they weren't going to suffocate Andy Crane live on TV.
But if you're having,
he'd be fine.
But if you're having the bath in beans, you are going to be finding beans in your nethers for a long time.
Well, Helen, answer me this, says Alan. How many tins of baked beans does it take to fill an average bath? And therefore, how much sponsorship would you need to break even against the cost of the beans?
Okay, well, the average bath, I would say, is around 180 litres.
Sounds right.
A tin of beans is about 450 millilitres, and therefore, you would need 400 tins of beans to fill that 180-litre bath.
Yeah,
if you're filling it, I mean, you probably would want slightly less so that you could fit the human being in it without them slopping over the sides.
Also, I doubt you get a normal-sized tin of beans. Wouldn't you go to Costco and get a big drum?
Yeah, but, like, I think the tenets of his question, Martin, he wants the standard bean measurement, which is
right.
The normal tin. A four-pack of Heinz baked beans, so in Britain, the classic baked bean.
The standard bearer.
That is about £2.
Why would you splash out on Heinz?
Well, okay, so if you wanted the value beans, that's about half as much. So
really?
Let's say...
A pound for 4 tins of baked beans?
Hence the value, Martin. Have you never bought value beans before?
I thought value beans were about 6p.
I went on the Tesco website, and I think value beans were about 24p a can. And therefore, if you were spending £1 for a four-pack of value beans at Tesco, you would need to spend £100 to fill the bath of 180 litres with the beans.
I mean, the point is, however you do the maths, that is a three-figure sum on beans.
Yeah, but I think probably that's quite small compared to, like, if you're running a marathon, you probably need to get new trainers that are over £100.
So what we're learning is that you need, I mean, obviously you could get sponsored for £101 and then the whole thing hasn't cost you anything and you give money to charity, but then you've got to drive to the supermarket to pick up the beans or spend time online. Or,
well, unless every time you go to the supermarket for a year beforehand, you pick up some beans.
Yeah.
Take them with you. But I think the point of this kind of stunt is it's a public-facing one.
Yes, it is. It's not something you do it in your home by yourself.
You're expecting this one to really accumulate a lot more than you spend out on it.
Yeah. So what's the minimum you could... Because people always get a round of applause, don't they, on Red Nose Day itself. Standing up in the audience, I sat in a bath of baked beans and I raised... And they could say anything and the studio audience will applaud. But actually, the studio audience should boo if it's under £100, shouldn't they?
Also, it's a lot of wastage. What are you going to do with 180 litres of beans afterwards?
And also, there are people starving in Africa. You know, that is the point of comic relief. You are wasting a crop.
Maybe that's why the bean baths stopped being done, because it was just outlandish. Oh, look at me. Unlike you, I've got so much food. I'm just bathing in it and then throwing it away.
Yeah.
400 baked beans, tins of baked beans, that's a meal for over a month for a large family, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, a pretty
really
gross
big,
meal.
Really big meal.
Yeah, not once it's had someone's pubes in
it. So they're chucking them away afterwards. I wonder whether they feed them to animals, whether baked beans are not good animal food. But do they warm them before you go in? Because sitting in cold beans would be
well,
pretty
bad. Well, I
wonder
bad. If that's... Isn't that the part of the challenge, that they're cold?
Right, I don't know.
What's the challenge, though? Is it just getting in a bath?
How long do you have to sit there for? Like, until you pass out? Yeah.
My brother had to do a paddling pool full of custard for a charity event once, but it got in his hair, and that's what everyone wants to see with my brother's hair.
That would be good, yeah.
I remember seeing, you know, magazines have stupid sex tips in,
yes.
Like Cosmo, and one of them was like, lovers, take a bath together and fill it with cooked spaghetti beforehand. It will sensuously stroke your bodies. And I was like, you've been in a bath with spaghetti. Like, soon the starch will bond it together in this huge, like, eel of spaghetti. And then your bath is covered in starch and bits of spaghetti. It's hard enough to get them out of the bottom of a saucepan, let alone a bath.
Yeah.
Where's the romance in that?
Yeah. And where's the good taste in spaghetti that tastes of palm olive and semen? A thought for another day.
Yeah, great.
But I've got a supplement.
I'm not going to eat your pasta sauce.
But I've got a... No, I'm saying they've been in the bath with your romantic encounter.
Better than your tuna pasta surprise thing.
Supplemental question from Alan. Does he mean supplementary? He does, doesn't he?
I don't know. I don't know what Alan means. I can't see into his mind.
I say supplemental in Star Trek.
Does that work? Okay, yeah. Fine. He says, Helen, answer me this. How on earth do you empty a baked bean bath when you're finished without blocking all of the plumbing?
That is a very good question, Alan. Yeah. I think it would probably be easier to do it in something that wasn't plumbed in, so maybe a paddling pool, where you can just tip the beans out in the end. Because it's hard
and
enough...
And you're buying a paddling pool as well and throwing that away afterwards because it's full of beans.
You can use an existing paddling pool.
Yeah, and then hose it off, but then you're wasting water. And again, you've still got to put the beans somewhere. I find it hard enough disposing of soup because you don't want to put that down the plug hole. It's too thick, but you don't want to put it in the bin. It's too runny.
I think with the beans, you could probably chuck them into a wheelie bin, though. Maybe not in the 80s, when they didn't have wheelie bins.
You're just creating someone else's problem. And the poor bin man getting splattered by 180 litres of beans. It's all a nightmare. So I would say, Alan, what you've done is highlight the very real horror that is the bean bath. Yeah. It's not a jaunty charity thing at all. It's fraught.
Why do we always...
It's just outsourcing difficulties for other people.
Can I just say, for the record, we're not terribly hearted people. Like, you know, it seems whenever we talk about charity, we always say, that's such a waste of time.
Just give them the money and stop doing stupid attention-grabbing things.
You know, that's an easy thing to do. Like, you know...
Like we ever do anything difficult.
Exactly. Respect to anyone making money for comic relief. It's just, you know, sitting in a bath of baked beans, slightly ridiculous.
Yeah, don't do it in a way that is causing environmental... hunger problems.
Yeah, exactly.
And they eat the beans afterwards.
Yeah, okay, that should be the thing. You have to eat your way out of the bath of beans. That is a real challenge. That is really putting yourself out for people.
Ladies and gentlemen, we now proudly present the intermission, brought to you by Answer Me This, episode 75, available to buy at answermethisstore.com.
I would be worried that whatever my last words are, whoever was transcribing them would punctuate them badly. Punctuation denotes tone.
Well, maybe that should be your last words. Punctuation denotes tone. There's only three words in that sentence. There's no way they can fuck it up with punctuation.
Well, but unless you put punctuation denotes, comma, tone, exclamation mark, as if you're talking to someone called Tony. Listeners, please do give us a call on the following number. 0208-123-5877. Or Skype Answer Me This to ask us a question using your voice. And let's hear who's done that.
Hey there, this is Nick calling from Oakland, California in the United States. Helen and Ollie, answer me this. What ever happened to Audrey Hepburn's deer? If you search around, you'll find a bunch of photos of a pet deer that... the actress Audrey Hepburn got, but all the photos are of the deer as a small doe, and I want to know why have we never seen any photos of the adult deer. Did she get rid of it? Did she eat it? What happened?
Well, presumably she would be dead by now. I mean, how long do deer live?
That's a good question, which I haven't checked.
I think it's reasonable to assume that they wouldn't outlive Audrey Hepburn.
It's a lot easier to have your picture taken with a fawn than with a full-grown deer, because the fawn is only about 3 foot high, but a full-grown deer is quite a beast, and the delicate Audrey Hepburn probably wouldn't find it as easy to pick up and cuddle.
I think that's probably right, and it's also a less appealing image. I mean, Audrey Hepburn's really interesting, isn't she? Because she's always obviously selling herself as a glamorpus. But it's always very buttoned up and subtle.
I think she's more vulnerable than glamorous.
Exactly. Mm. And with
delicate.
A large deer, you'd be worried it was going to claw out her eyes. Whereas with a little
or
one...
Or headbutt her.
Yeah. Mm. Whereas the little one, the comparative sizes seem to work for her general image, I think.
So the reason why she started having this deer is when she was filming the film Green Mansions, which came out in 1959, was directed by her then-husband Mel Ferrer. Her character has an animal sidekick, which is a fawn. And so they suggested that she take the fawn home with her so that the fawn learnt to follow her around and they built up a rapport. And apparently she really fell for the fawn and they were great pals. It was called Pippin and she nicknamed it Ip.
Good.
As if Pip was too much of a mouthful.
She obviously wasn't familiar with the dip dog shit rhyme from my youth. Otherwise she would have avoided that studiously.
But people aren't sure what happened to the fawn after the filming. So maybe it went off to become a full-grown deer in an appropriate place for deer to live.
Oh, come on. People aren't aware what happened to the deer after filming because, as ever in Hollywood, no one gives a shit, do they? It's like, what happened to child stars? Well, they all went mental because no one cares.
Or they just grow up and get ugly. But in a fawn's case, I mean, you would send it off to an animal sanctuary, wouldn't you, or something like that, to be rehabilitated for wildlife.
Well, I suppose even then they'd be aware that there was the danger of negative press if anyone thought to investigate what had happened. But I don't think
I don't know. There wasn't animal cruelty in the late 50s, was there?
Well, I think they probably... A tabloid would have run that story. But I still think the whole concept of aftercare, it seems to me a kind of post-1980s concept.
But there's some rumours that after she filmed Green Mansions, she broke vertebrae. She fell off a horse. And then she had a miscarriage. And to cheer her up, her husband bought her Ip.
Oh, really?
To keep as a pet. But people don't know. Where would you keep a fawn? Where would you keep a deer? A full-grown deer?
I bet she had a big garden, though.
I sort of thought Los Angeles is probably not the optimal home for deer.
Yeah, old-school Beverly Hills mansions don't have gardens that are that big, either. Like, you have... It's a sizable... You know, if it was one of our houses, we'd be happy with it.
Sure.
But you're not talking about the kind of land where you'd keep animals, really.
I think Audrey Hepburn's fawn is remarkable. The pictures are beautiful, but not as remarkable as the lion that Melanie Griffith grew up with. Her mother, Tippi Hedren, kept a huge fucking lion in their house. And there are pictures of Melanie Griffith asleep with the lion, hanging around by the pool with the lion, this big... lion.
I think it's also worth remarking upon that particular creature that it was called Neil. I think that's one of the best things about any Hollywood animal.
That's almost a palindrome of lions, isn't it?
I suppose it's a good way to kid yourself that a lion is an appropriate house pet. And she has now admitted that that was a really bad idea.
Yeah, because
the lion
it obviously was.
Them.
And in fact, Tippi Hedren is now involved, isn't she, with the protection of big cats. She runs a sanctuary and so on.
Yeah, from her own bathroom.
But it's because I think that experience opened her eyes to the fact that what they were doing was wrong. But it seemed to take her decades to realise that it was wrong.
And for all of them to get some horrific lion-related injuries.
And the,
did they?
Yeah, Melanie Griffith got clawed across the face by one of the lions.
So what happened to Neil Lyon?
Neil Lyon, I don't know. Well, she opened up this lion sanctuary, so I think probably all of her...
Neil went in there.
Yeah, she became crazy cat lady, but for big cats.
But the origins of the reason that that lion was living in the Hedren/Griffith household was the same. It was for a film. The original concept was, this is a fun idea for a movie. People who live with a load of big cats in their house in a domestic situation, kind of like Turner and Hooch, but with an edge. And that's why the director, similar story to Audrey Hepburn, it's interesting. Mm. The director says, well, fine, but you need to have a rapport and you need to know, as actress/producer, what it is like to live with a lion. So when they did that photo shoot that you're thinking of for Life magazine, they had been spending a year or so living with this thing in their house. And it's so insane that you would risk your life on a daily basis so that you could research something for a film. I just don't understand. I'm so fascinated by the story, and I now want to see that film. It's called Raw. They made it in about 1981. I want to know what that is like.
And Jan de Bont had his scalp ripped off by a lion when directing it.
Amazing. Director of photography.
Sorry, yes. When he was DPing it.
Sorry to get all IMDb on your ass.
So, yeah, the director got chewed and swallowed.
So, I know this might sound like a slightly stupid question, but how dangerous is it to live with a lion? I mean,
dangerous. She admits, dangerous.
Right.
It's fucking dangerous.
It's not like you form a rapport with them and it's okay.
No, you do. You absolutely do. But that's, in a sense, the danger, isn't it? I mean, that is what happened to Siegfried and Roy, really, wasn't it? It was a tiger. But the thing is, you can have a relationship with a cat. And this goes to the same, I dare say, with myself and Coco. You can have a relationship with a cat. You can think that it loves you. And indeed, at the moments that it's purring and being happy, it probably does feel moments of love. But essentially, in that brain, there is a psychopathic killer. And all it takes
I wouldn't say psychopathic. It's just got different priorities to human beings.
No, I would say there are moments where it doesn't feel empathy with what it kills. That's how it lives.
You can't tell.
Works.
It might be crying.
I think we can be fairly sure.
Whilst it rips that stomach out.
I think we'd be fairly sure. And a lion can just decide one moment, for whatever reason, you're threatening it its family.
Ah, fuck this.
And exactly. And it doesn't think back, oh, but we've had such good times. You know, it will just kill you.
Yeah. Like the SeaWorld whales.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyone would think that these wild creatures are not really meant to be in captivity.
Although, in fairness to Tippi Hedren and their lion Neil,
yeah.
He did look happy in the pictures. I know it's a photo, but
you can't tell with a lion because they always look a bit smiley, like you.
Yeah, that's true.
He's just got an upturned mouth when you're sad.
Pain was going on. But yeah, but generally speaking, I think the lion probably had a bit of a riot living in a Hollywood house, swimming pool, reign of the house.
Don Johnson probably came to visit towards the end of Neil's tenure.
Yeah, I wonder if they ever had a threesome.
Oh.
It's no more inappropriate than generally what was happening in that relationship anyway. She was 14. So anyway, point being... fascinating story that will obviously never ever happen again, except maybe in Bollywood.
It probably would happen because you've got idiots like Justin Bieber, although he jettisoned his monkey, didn't he?
Yeah, that was a big story, wasn't it? What did he do? He adopted one and then decided to leave it somewhere.
He left it in Germany.
Hilarious.
What kind of monkey was it?
A lonely one, Martin. Only Elvis had a kangaroo pet. That is a dangerous pet because those can punch your lights out.
You've got to be careful though, because the Tippi Hedren thing, that was real. Like we've said, Audrey Hepburn was real. Elvis pet kangaroo, I think, was probably just a photo shoot.
What about Nicolas Cage's pet octopus? They found that when they were trying to work out how much he was worth because they were going to have to bankrupt him. Mm. And they're like, what's the resale value on a pet octopus?
I mean, that's tricky, isn't it? Because, of course, what you're not looking is what the resale value would be on a pet octopus that didn't belong to an Oscar-winning actor. Mm. But at what point does Nicolas Cage's octopus become worth more than anyone else's?
Or less.
Indeed, yeah. I think the most exotic modern example is probably Mike Tyson's tiger.
But Mike Tyson is also a keen pigeon keeper, and I think that is more extraordinary than Mike Tyson having a tiger.
I agree, because you'd expect him to have a tiger. He was probably given a tiger, whereas he probably sought out pigeons.
He's devoted to the pigeons.
It's a bit less of a penis extension, isn't it, to have a load of pigeons?
Yeah, well, I don't know what his penis looks like.
There are hundreds of it, and it's covered in feathers.
The tiger that's in The Hangover...
Yeah.
Is Mike Tyson's tiger.
And he had it before The Hangover.
I don't know.
Was he like, well, I'll be in The Hangover, but it's my day to look after the tiger, so he has to come.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but I think that's a brilliant thing. Like, if you could, 'cause often people are like, well, you can use my property if my wife plays the part of the mistress, you know. But to actually be like, you can film with Mike Tyson, but you must have a cameo for the tiger.
Where do people buy these animals? These animals that I think are endangered.
I know.
How do you obtain them as pets? That's the kind of thing Harrods used to sell, isn't it? But do they still?
Harrods don't.
Because there must be laws now.
Harrods don't even sell kittens anymore. They don't have live pets. Yeah, they've closed their pet department.
That's because they were always getting skinned by the fur coat department.
The short answer is places like China and Vietnam. You just go direct to the country where they don't have a rule on it, and you sort of make yourself feel better about the fact that it might have a happier life, arguably, in California. Yeah. But it is a bit suspect, isn't it?
I suppose in the olden days, you probably could have got an animal that they were retiring from a circus.
Hmm.
But now circus animals are rarer. You'd have to get a retired Cirque du Soleil gymnast, wouldn't you?
Now, that's a real curveball you've just thrown there, Helen, because are you doing good for animals and their welfare by taking an animal, almost a rescue animal, from a circus? Mm-hmm. Or are you doing bad because you're still keeping it in captivity or in a domestic setting where it's not supposed to be?
Yes, I suppose the domestic setting is a problem, whereas if you made it possible for that animal to be kept in an appropriate kind of animal refuge...
Yeah. Then you're doing a good thing, but let's be honest, celebrities, if they do that, tend not to boast about it. They tend to boast about the fact they have a pet exotic thing.
Like, I don't know. If celebrities do something good, most of them want to boast about it, so you think they're not terrible narcissists.
The only one I can think of with regard to animal sanctuaries is Anne Widdecombe and her donkeys. You know, like, Anne Widdecombe gives a portion of all of her appearance fees to fund donkeys in Israel.
Why does she like Israeli donkeys so much more than people?
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I don't know. And I'm sure they are treated badly by tribes in the desert or whatever. But of all the humanitarian courses... Oh, well, not even humanitarian, is it? What would you even call it?
Donkitarian.
Donkitarian causes. Weird.
Maybe Anne thinks that you have to support the animals that bore Mary towards Bethlehem before giving birth to Jesus.
Actually, that probably is it, isn't it?
God.
Now you mention it, of course, she's quite a religious Christian, she probably does that. And in a way, at least, she's helping the donkeys with her beliefs.
She might like the song Little Donkey, yeah.
Maybe she likes the Tindersticks album Donkeys.
They gave a lot of money to donkey sanctuaries, didn't they?
How many social networks are you on? Vibo, Friendster, PathQPorn, MySpace, Ping and Google Buzz. If you want to be our pal, go to this URL. Facebook.com/answermethis or Twitter.com/HelenAndOllie. But please don't follow us in real life.
Well, here is a question about the internet from Adam, who says, Helen, answer me this. Why did Twitter come up with the 140-character limit? It's a good idea so you don't ramble on, but why 140 and not, say, 100?
Well, I suppose the upper bound was the length of a text message, which at the time Twitter was contemplating its wares, was 160 characters. Remember that, guys, when text messages had to be short?
Yeah, and they were called Twitter.
And it was meant to be a text-based service, and so it was 140 characters, and then the rest of them were available for your handle.
Yes, because also it was kind of pre-smartphone as well. Yeah. So actually the idea was not just that you'd look online and be able to send messages from your phone to online, but that actually you'd be able to read other people's messages using your phone.
So that would happen.
That would have to be a text back at you, wouldn't it?
Because until I got my first smartphone in late 2011, because I'm a late adopter of things, I was texting Twitter to tweet on the go.
Yeah, I remember I used to do that. It's such a hilarious idea.
I didn't know if anyone had responded till I got home.
Yeah, you did. That's funny, isn't it, that happened even within a recent lifetime.
It was an innocent time, and I got a lot more reading of books done.
But nowadays, of course, there would technologically very much be the option to allow us to write more than 140 characters.
Sure. But they've got their shtick.
They've got their and it's more than their shtick, it's their whole raison d'etre, isn't it? Keep it brief.
I think Twitter are quite unusual in social networks for not trying to do anything particularly different to what they did when they started.
Yeah.
Facebook throwing a lot of mud at the wall and everyone's like, oh, Facebook's a bit insecure.
Yeah.
No, Twitter, staying with what works.
I think that's right, but you have to acknowledge that because Twitter are the main social network for real-time news, it's become a bit more important that sometimes you want the conversation to be a little bit more sophisticated than just 140 characters.
I don't know. You can get a lot of very finely honed sophistication in there.
You can, and I welcome the opportunity sometimes to sub down, because sometimes I'll write exactly what I've put on Facebook and put it on Twitter, but it doesn't fit, so I have to sub words out. And then I look at the tweet and I think, actually, that's better than what I put on Facebook, because I've thought about it
always
more.
Be editing, people.
Which is good. But like I say, I think you do have to acknowledge sometimes there isn't much room for nuance. I know you can put a link to a longer article, but a lot of people won't read that and they'll just see the first tweet in a series of tweets or something like that. Do you know what I mean? It's sometimes you just want more. But I guess where do you draw the line?
It's the space between a tweet and a blog post, isn't it?
Adam has another question. He says, Ollie, answer me this. Why do they call internet cookies cookies?
Not just they. We.
Everyone.
Me.
You
call
Adam.
You call it that.
You just did.
Cookie Monster calls it that.
Caught you in the act. So, yeah, so why would they call something which is for good and for evil after something that, well, I suppose it is good and evil in that it's delicious, but also very bad for you health-wise?
Two reasons. The first, most easily relatable one, and the reason why it caught on, I think, is it is essentially a reference to when you eat a cookie and it leaves crumbs behind.
Oh!
So you see a trail, you know, someone's left got some crumbs on their jumper or on the sideboard or whatever because they've eaten a cookie. Problem with that analogy, of course, is that then really they should be called crumbs and the website should be called cookies.
And or they should be called soup stains, because I think that's a lot more noticeable and harder to get out.
Yeah, that's very much...
I mean, you have to put the whole thing through the wash, which is like when you clear your cookies.
But that's a Western Europe reference. I mean, there are hot countries in the world where they just don't do soup. Everyone knows what a cookie is.
I think soup is more universal than you give it credit for, Ollie. There are hot countries where they do not bake cookies because baking is an inconvenience.
I agree that soup is more prevalent than cookies, but I think cookies are more relatable because of the pervasiveness of American culture.
I disagree. I think it's
American cultural centralism.
In any case, they're both more relevant than spam, and yet everyone says spam. The second reason that they say cookie is that it was an extant term from computer programming anyway.
Right.
Because in the 1970s, I think, at Xerox, some computer programmers first invented something that is vaguely related to what a modern cookie is. Obviously, it wasn't around the internet because they didn't have the internet at Xerox then. But they invented a file on a computer that kind of follows you around the computer as you use it.
Mm. Like a user preference file.
Yeah. And they called that a cookie because they were a bit wacky and they were nerds.
Because it was the Valley, man.
Apparently at the time, the Andy Williams show, which was a big show, had a character which followed Andy Williams around asking him for a cookie. So it was a joke about that. Kind of like someone would do a joke about Red Dwarf or the IT Crowd now.
Yeah, but then 40 years later, you'd look back at that joke and think, that reason was flimsy.
But anyway, so those are the two reasons. So when people were thinking for the crumb analogy, they reached for cookie because it already existed in computing circles as a term.
Right.
Okay. So there you go.
And when in the internet did they decide to nab Xerox's term?
I think right from the early days. Right. I think it was Netscape specifically that started talking about cookies because Netscape basically designed what we now think of as a browser, didn't they? They were there before AOL and Internet Explorer and all of the early ones. Netscape was there, and I think they created a lot of the infrastructure and the language that we use. But yeah, I don't remember a time ever learning anything about the internet without people talking about cookies and spam, so it was right there from the late 90s, wasn't it?
It's always very food-focused.
I guess again, nerds.
They were just looking at what was stuck in between their keyboard keys. Cookie crumbs.
Lots of spam.
But an answer me this satchel, or an answer me this apron.
I've still got too much money.
But an answer me this mug, or an answer me this yellow t-shirt.
I do not like yellow, I don't look good in yellow.
They're both available in red and white and black.
Where can I get these things from?
From cafepress.com/answer me this.
I've got too much money. I haven't anymore because although the items were very reasonably priced, the import duty was cripplingly expensive, but no matter, it was still worth it, because I'm a fly mofo!
Here's a question from an anonymous person who says, I am currently lodging with a lovely family while working for an opera company.
Amazing first sentence.
Well, you're going to like the second. I am a fight director.
Incredible.
And my job entails a lot of playing with weaponry of all sorts. As a way of ingratiating myself with the two little boys of the family, I let them into my kit bag to play with blunt stage swords, bows and arrows, rubber knives, etc.
Sounds fun.
I supervised them the whole time, and when they wanted to fight each other rather than just pretend to be Jedi, because it doesn't matter what age you are when you're given a sword, what else are you going to do? I gave them safe rubber swords to play with, so they could whirl on each other to their heart's content.
Yeah, I can imagine that mum or dad looking on to that might be, like, wildly impressed to begin with, and then think, hold on, what are you filling our sons' heads with?
The thing is, you can do a lot of damage with blunted weapons and rubber if you're ingenious.
And children will find a way, won't they?
Oh, they will, because they're savages and they don't understand the concept of causing other people pain yet.
That's right. Well, or actually, I mean, I remember thinking when I was a kid, things like when you were in a swimming pool, oh, it'd be fun to hold that person down for 7 seconds and see what happens.
Until they stop thrashing.
Yeah. You don't think, oh, well, but then their mummy and dad would be really upset because I'd have killed them.
Yeah.
That just doesn't occur to you.
You didn't.
Yeah.
But you were a very strange sociopathic child.
Yeah, maybe.
The family is fairly quiet and a little uptight.
Brilliant.
The boys are 6 and 4 and called Sebastian and Horace, which tells you all you really need to know about their white-carpeted middle-class existence.
Give them the sharp ones.
I've got a nephew called Horace, but their carpets aren't white. So when they were let loose to play, fight, shoot some arrows and generally just do what little boys do, they loved it.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? The suggestion being that an uptight existence is anathema to a young boy. But actually, as a child, I wanted a more uptight existence.
Yeah, children, they relish structure, right?
Yes, I didn't want my mum's open-minded modernity.
Oh, Jesus. The dad also thought it was fun. But the mother now seems to think I'm a corrupting influence and has been very firm that the boys are not allowed to play with the spare kit anymore. It's always the mum that is the killjoy, isn't it? Never the killjoy dad.
Well, it's often the mum that has to take on the role of being the killjoy because the dad's not prepared to. And that is why women are better than men.
And the mum is often the one tending to the injuries and the broken vases and stuff in the house. Anonymous continues, I respected her request and have kept everything locked away, but both boys have been badgering me for weeks now to let them play around again. It's hard to say no to their sincere and excited requests, and I think the mother is being a little overbearing. So Ollie, answer me this. What should I do? Let them play and piss off the mum, or withhold fun and piss off the kids? Well, obviously piss off the kids, because they don't own the house you're staying in.
I think if you really think it's that much of an issue, you have a structured sit down with mum, mm-hmm. and you say it was, they got so excited about it and they keep asking me for it, and I totally understand why you don't want this in the house, and I totally understand that you're worried about their safety and you don't want to encourage them to get into fighting, but you know, they showed such a natural disposition to it. I'm a fight choreographer and I understand like how I can teach them some real skills they could use that will help them with their kind of
their nativity play.
Well, you know, I don't know, their balance or some shit, make it up, I don't know. And why don't we do this in a safe environment one weekend? In other words, one weekend, can I take them to the forest and I'll make sure that they're safe and we'll supervise it.
Let me take your two infants to the forest with my weapons. Yeah, that's going to go down a real treat, Ollie. Good one. Maybe, though, you need to get the mum interested in weapons, like in a film where an uptight woman is taken to a firing range and suddenly loosens up a lot.
Okay, so you're basically imagining Annette Bening in American Beauty.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah. Then maybe she will be more into the children having the weapons, or maybe take it outside. Is the problem that they're doing it in a confined space and she's worried about her household goods?
I mean, actually, boys screaming at each other, because inevitably the weapons comes with screaming. Yeah, that's trying.
I think, though, just knock it on the head, because I've seen this with my nieces. Once you start them on something, it escalates. And if you start them on something that is them doing play violence, it becomes violence. So I think if they're locked away, just tell them that the stuff isn't here anymore. It's at work.
Yeah, these are the weapons being locked away, not the children.
Yeah, well, you could lock the children away. And
the
then
children
the
locked
problem,
away, problem
yeah.
solved, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's survival of the fittest.
But I
think, then they'll never want to play with weapons again.
I just think if you're staying in this woman's house, though, it's kind of her you've got to please more than the children. The children forget soon. I know you say they've been whining at you.
No. Little boys will not forget that there is a closed bag full of play weapons concealed somewhere in the house
but just pretend,
they once were able to play with.
Pretend it's not in the house. Pretend it's at the opera. And then take them to the opera and then they won't be interested anymore, because what four-year-old can sit through an opera?
That's true.
But maybe you just need to make them interested in another thing that is less vicious. They've got you pegged as a fun person,
yes.
but can you divert the fun to something which might not be your professional interest?
Yes. Can ping pong fill the void?
No, nothing with missiles.
Yeah.
God's sake.
Well, but that's how they see him. They see him as the guy who brings the physical fun.
Loom bands or some shit like that.
What about like something like tightrope walking? Something that's sort of like
sense
exciting.
Of danger,
yeah,
but not
exciting,
violent,
but yeah. not kind of combative and
yeah.
oppositional.
That's quite good. Yeah.
Something tells me the mother's not going to be into the tightrope walking.
Yeah, you can keep tightrope walking, you know, foot above the ground.
Yeah, but how are you going to suspend the rope without ruining the plaster?
Hold on, this is going to be too much like being at work for this guy, though, isn't
yeah.
it? You know, he spends all day choreographing fights.
You can lash a rope to a couple of trees.
But it's one thing giving some people some weapons and saying go for it, do your worst. It's another thing actually teaching them to tightrope walk. I mean,
yeah,
he'd have to learn how to teach it to begin with.
It seems like he's got the sort of will to show these kids.
Teach them an appreciation for opera. No parent can complain about that.
I think that's
a tall order. That's
yeah, but you haven't
order.
Got a children called Sebastian and Horace. If you did and you had white carpet, maybe you would be thrilled.
Oh,
the idea that the opera director who's living with you is teaching your children about opera appreciation.
They'd grow up like Fraser and Niles.
Exactly.
You can use the sword, but only if you can sing the aria.
Yeah. Yeah. Teach them the exact same scene that you're teaching at work.
Well, listeners, what would you do? Because I'm sure all of you have been in this situation.
It's very commonplace, isn't it?
Get in touch with your suggestions or just send us a question. Our contact details are on our website.
AnswerMeThisPodcast.com, where you can also find details of where to buy our first 170 episodes.
And our albums.
And our albums and our apps, and you can donate to the show.
Oh, lovely. And we're all individually on Twitter as well. The three of us under our names.
Martin, you just at Martin Austwick.
Yeah, I'm not Martin the same way I'm at Martin Austwick.
Yeah. He has a life, you know.
Thank you for listening and for sending us questions. Keep doing that.
Such good eggs.
Otherwise, we die in this form.
Yeah.
Not in real life on our real Twitter profiles.
But if you die in the Matrix, you die in real life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh.
It's no play battle anymore.
Well, if you send us questions, we'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 310.
See you then.
Bye! Bye.